So we left off last week. We began to discuss the halachas of making a batim. So we pointed out that there's a halacha when it comes to the tefillin shel rosh, that even though they're made out of four batim, but they're supposed to be me'or echad. They're supposed to be one unit. Zikar ben echad, zikar echad am rachamana. So we have different opinions in the Rishon and what exactly that means. So does that mean that they literally have to come me'or echad? They have to come from one piece of skin? Or do we say that even if you take four separate pieces of skin, you glue them together, you sew them together, you do some kind of an act of chibur, that's also considered to be acceptable. So we try lechatchila, the more expensive tefillin, which are pretty much the standard tefillin that most of us wear today, are made out of literally me'or echad. They're made me'or magasa, me'or echad. So one doesn't have to rely on this kula in terms of dibur chibur, not chibur, etc. There is a flip side shaila that comes up, which is a common shaila, which comes up in our in the tefillin that we have also in the Gassos tefillin, and that's as follows. Many batimachers like to, when they produce the batim, they want to make sure that the batim are going to remain together, that the four compartments are actually going to stay together, because in a few years down the line, if the batim start to separate from one another, it's going to throw into question the kashas of the tefillin in terms of the rivua. We'll talk about this a little bit later on. There's a halacha l'moshem seir that tefillin have to be square. So in theory, you can have a perfectly square pair of tefillin, but then after time, if they start to separate, so that's going to be a problem. So what some batim machers like to do is they like to put a little bit of glue in between the different parts of the mold just to make sure to make certain that the parts of the batim remain together. So this was a question that some poskim raised. Is that really acceptable? Because we said that the tefillin shorosh have to be four separate compartments. L'totofas ben en echas, and halacha l'moshem seir says l'totofas means it has to be four. Before that's one, it has to be arba shenecha, but it has to basically be four. So here the question becomes as follows: if you take glue and you glue together between the compartments, so then maybe glue is a chibur. Maybe the devik is considered to be a chibur. It's considered to be something that joins the four compartments together. And now guess what? Now you don't have four batim anymore. Now you have a tefillin shoyad again. Now you have a one box. You have one bias. So here glue is going to cause your tzaras. So before we said that glue may help you to take four things and make them into one, but now the problem is the making it into one may be a problem, because if it's too much one, so then it's no longer four. So there are some poskim who are opposed to this glue. They thought that the glue wasn't right, that you should leave the glue out, you should figure out some other eitza how to do it. And others say that you put a little bit of glue in on the bottom, as long as they're basically separate on top, that's okay. So that's what many of the tefillin do today, is that they put up some little drops of glue or something literally towards the bottom, but pretty much towards the top, they are in fact distinct. The self from Tay, there's a way to tell whether your tefillin has glue or not. I wouldn't recommend to do it, but there is a way to tell. It's called the razor blade test. That means if you take a, don't try to do it on a plane. You take a razor blade and you go in between the four compartments and you try to see will the razor blade go down or not. So if it goes down through, that means you know that they're separate from one another. If the razor blade gets stuck and you're pushing and pushing and pushing, it's not going anywhere. The reason why it's not going anywhere is because there's glue that's blocking it from going somewhere. So again, I wouldn't recommend to do it, but sometimes the self from will do it. If you ask a self if you want to know whether you how high up is your glue, so they could tell by doing that test. So again, there are some poskim who had issues with it. There is an issue the Mishnah Berurah already raises, quotes from the Chayodam, which is the following, that what if you have the less expensive tefillin, the pshutos, which are literally made out of four pieces of skin, and then those four pieces of skin are glued together on the bottom, and then they're also glued together on the top. That means they're all glued mamish topped from bottom to top. So comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, wait a second, you have to decide, is glue considered to be a chibur or is glue not a chibur? Does glue make things into one or does it not make things into one? So if it doesn't make things into one, so then you don't have orechats, then the whole tefillin puzzle. If it does make things into one, so then you have one bias, which you're not supposed to have. You're supposed to have one bias, which is four batim. So the Mishnah Berurah says, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have your glue and eat it. It means make up your mind. Either the glue is good or is no good. So the Mishnah Berurah says, if you have the less expensive pairs of tefillin, then you shouldn't glue them up to the top. If you have a real orechad, all right, nishkefelech of this glue. But if you have the cheaper tefillin, and you glue them also to boot, so then he says, so then the mamashach tefillin are no good, because either glue is a chibur or is it not a chibur. Not everyone accepts that chiddush of the Mishnah Berurah. There are those who question it. There is a chasam sofer. I think it's relevant for this week's haftarah, if I'm not mistaken. What does the haftarah say? Ha'omer la'devek tovu? Isn't this Parshas Lech Lecha's haftarah? I think so. I'm not mistaken. Ha'omer la'devek tovu was a pasuk in Navi. So the chasam sofer writes in the tshuva when he talks about glue and tefillin. So he quotes this pasuk and he says, Ha'omer la'devek lo tovu. He means, keep the glue away from tefillin. The more glue you have in tefillin, the more problems you can have in tefillin. So we try that again. You get your tefillin a good, high quality batim. So hopefully they're real orechad. You don't have to rely on the kula of glue making to orechad. And hopefully the better tefillin are what they call prudos. That means they're not literally glued up all the way to the top, because that itself causes problems. So that's the best quality. tefillin. Those are interested to find out which quality tefillin their particular batim fall under, so I wouldn't do the razor test myself. You want to bring it to a sofer type. What you can do with that information, I'm not sure. Some soferim will try to open up the glue a little bit. That means that they find that the glue is all the way to the top, and the person's mocked, but he doesn't want it to be so glued, so some soferim will try to pry the batim open. They usually will give you a disclaimer on that, saying that they're not responsible for any damage that happens to the batim, because if they push a little bit too hard, they may open it up all right. They may open it up beyond repair. So from get a little bit nervous to do that without having you either literally or figuratively sign your waiver on that one. There is another halacha moshe mesidi in terms of tefillin that we just mentioned before, and that's that the tefillin have to be meruvah, that they have to be, you have to have rivua, they have to be square. So this is a big machlokes in the Rishonim, which part of tefillin exactly has to be square. The Gemara never says. The Gemara just says tefillin meruvah halacha moshe mesidi. Halacha moshe mesidi tefillin have to be square, but which part of the tefillin have to be square is unclear. So there are three different permutations in the Rishonim. So there are some Rishonim who say it refers to the batim, so it means the top of the box has to be a square. It has to be as perfect a square as the halacha requires. That's what tefillin meruvah and halacha moshe mesidi refers to. There are others who say that the revuah of tefillin, the halacha moshe mesidi, the tefillin have to be square, refers to the tisura, refers to the base of the tefillin. Not only does the halacha moshe mesidi require a box for the tefillin, a house for the tefillin, but you have to have a tisura on the bottom. You have to have a piece of skin, piece of leather, which is underneath, which is closing up, which is sewed up to the top of the bayis. Then there happens to also be halacha moshe mesidi requiring mavart, a place for the ritzuah to go through. But many rishonim say that the halacha moshe mesidi, the tefillin have to be square, perhaps not only refers to the etzem abayis, but refers to the tisura. It refers to the bottom part of the tefillin. And the other rishonim will say that no, that maybe the revu of tefillin doesn't reply to the bayis, or perhaps doesn't reply to the tisura. Maybe it refers to the tefiros, to the stitching of the tefillin. We know that there's also halacha moshe mesidi that the tefillin have to be stitched together using gidin, using sinews that come from a kosher animal. So that stitching has to be a perfect square. So there are different permutations in the rishonim. What has to be square? The top, the bottom, the stitches, everything. The bottom line is we paskin all of them have to be square. Shulchan Aruch, we paskin everything has to be square. All three of the above have to be a perfect halachic square, both the bias itself, as well as the tisura on the bottom, as well as the stitching.
What stitching are you talking about?
The stitching that holds together take a look at your tefillin. There are stitches there. If they're not, we got big problems. There are stitches that hold together the tisura and the top part. So that stitching has to be the perfect shape of a square.
But if the box is already a square, what that already?
No, not necessarily. Not at all. If your holes are where the stitches are off, so you could theoretically. They're right. That's right. That's right. That's right. The holes have to be a perfect square going around. So, what exactly constitutes a perfect square in halacha? So the Gemara gives a shiurim. The Gemara says that the halacha is that it has to be. Has to go one time, one side's got to be one tefach, not the tefillin, obviously, it's smaller than a tefach, but it's got to be one tefach, and then the diagonal, the aloxin has to be one, the square root of two, isn't that the way it goes? Okay, so 1.4, whatever it is. So the Gemara says that as long as you have that ratio in terms of the aloxin, in terms of the diagonal to the side, that's considered to be a halachic square. So already the post can point out that number is not absolutely perfect, that the number of the square root of two keeps on going ad bias goel. So just as Tosfos points out in other places in Shas, that when the halacha speaks about the circles, so the halacha assumes that pi is considered to be 3. The halacha doesn't take into consideration the fact that it's 3.14, because you're never going to get to an end of it anyway. So kach nemar halacha moshe mesidi, that the halacha is you're allowed to, in a sense, round off the number that's considered to be 3. So too, for the purposes of squares, so it's considered to be, as long as the diagonal is the square root of 2, so then you're okay. That's considered halachically to be a square. So even though it's not absolutely perfect, that's good enough. So that's how we pass in the halacha. This is part of a general, overview in terms of halacha, that the halacha was given for normal people. The halacha was given not for laboratories. The halacha was given for normal a person who can make a pair of tefillin. He doesn't have to measure with the most intricate, up-to-date instruments. That the halacha was given the fira is b'nei adam. So this meets the criteria of what constitutes basically a square in halacha. That's perfectly okay. We have shilas that come up in terms of the revuv of tefillin come up very often. One of them in terms of the stitching, so there's a common problem that sometimes the stitching is off a little bit. Sometimes the stitching started off as being good, and then it loosened in time, and now the stitching gets a little bit saggy, and it's not really in a perfect square, so that really should be repaired. Very often the bias, also the revuv on the bias starts to get smashed up a little bit. So a lot of this is based on wear and tear, depending on how careful the person is with his tefillin. So if you, it always bothers me, you buy yeshiva, you know, buy by mitzvah for $1,000 pair of tefillin, and then you watch, he takes the tefillin, he smashes, when he takes it off, he smashes it into the box. So you have to teach the kids, you have to be delicate, it's gentle. If you want your tefillin to last for 30 years, so you have to be careful when you put them on, you need to put them off. The corners, you have to be careful with the corners, you have to time, the corners are going to start to round off if you're not careful with them. So the Shulchan Aruch speaks about what is the halacha of the revua gets messed up at a later point. So that's a problem. It would have to be fixed. How off does the revua have to be in order to be a problem? So it depends. You know, the corner curves or drop, you know, it rounds out a little bit. I mean, that's not considered to be a problem. But if it starts to look worse than that, if it starts to indent more than that, starts to get more pegimus than that, it would become problematic and the self would have to fix it.
Two worst ways to get the revua out of the films is by leaving it in your car.
Right, absolutely.
And the effects of heat and cold.
Right.
And also, this doesn't affect you and I. But
showering, those who take showers, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Or goo on their hair will also.
That's right. I can tell, I can look at a pair of tefillin and I can tell you whether the guy showers before davening or not. Because if a person showers every day before davening, you will see it on the bayis shel rosh. You'll see that slowly after time the bayis starts to erode a little bit. So yeah, Nachman, I mean, once you try to be, you can take a shower, just dry your hair off well before. I wasn't talking to you particularly, I'm talking about in general. Just I wasn't talking to myself particularly. There is another halacha Moshe Mesinai, as we said, we pointed out last week, most of the chos tefillin, most of the preparation, the bottom and the two, is not pure halacha Moshe Mesinai. So the Gemara in the Sechas Menachos tells us there was another halacha Moshe Mesinai, that the shin shel tefillin is halacha Moshe Mesinai. The fact that the bayis shel rosh, there has to be a shin present, so that's halacha Moshe Mesinai. It's interesting, the Gemara doesn't say two shins. The Gemara just says shin shel tefillin halacha Moshe Mesinai. It's assumed that that's what it means. You have to have two different shins on both sides based on the halacha Moshe Mesinai. There is a very strange, in a sense, halacha that we have in terms of the making of the shin, that there are two shins on the bayis shel rosh, but they're made in different ways. And one of them is what we call a three-head shin, that's a normal-looking shin, and then the other one is a four-headed shin, which is, some people, if you don't know the halacha, wouldn't even realize it. If you take a look at your tefillin next time, so you'll notice that on one of the, which side is which, I always forget, which is a I forgot it. One side is the three-headed chin, one has said one side is a four-headed chin. The post came right that if you goof and you make the one on the right side, one on the left side, and the wrong side, it's not mocking. It's okay. But the halacha is that it's supposed to be one three-headed chin and one four-headed chin. Where in the world did this halacha come from? So it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't say a word about it. The Gemara never mentions this idea that one is a four-headed chin. So I think the earliest source in terms of written source for this is a Shemusha Rabbah. There was a sefer that was written in the days of the Gaonim called Sefer Shemusha Rabbah, which is basically like a kitzur or shacharach how to make tefillin. It was like a two-page, the whole sefer was about 2 pages about how to make tefillin, how to wear tefillin, and the Rosh and Hilchos Tefillin quotes it. The Rishonim quoted shacharach quotes it very often. The different dinim that appear which have the source in the Shemusha Rabbah. So the Shemusha Rabbah is an authoritative source in terms of Hilchos Tefillin. It comes back from the days of the Gaonim. Although there are some things in the Shemusha Rabbah that we don't necessarily paskin like. So this whole idea of having a four-headed chin has its original source in the Shemusha Rabbah. The poskim assume that it's halacha Moshe Mesinai. The poskim assume that it's mamash ma'akev, that if a person has two three-headed chins, so the tefillin mataka not kosher. That's the consensus that Mishnah Berurah quotes from the later poskim. Assume that this is a real halacha, and then the Shemusha Rabbah is recording it, and that's what the Gemara meant when it said shin shel tefillin. It was understood that one is three-headed, one is four-headed. Others were questioned that a little bit, like it's hard to say exactly. I remember when we learned the tefillin first time with Rabbi Willig many, many years ago. So he wasn't disagreeing halacha with the Mishnah Berurah. He was just saying that, how do you know that's true? And if it doesn't stand in the Gemara b'Feirush, so how do you know? Mechatei said that's not called shin shel tefillin. If it's a three-headed shin, whatever it is, the bottom line is no one's going to have two three-headed shins. We're all going to make the tefillin the way they've been made for thousands of years. One is three-headed shin, and one is, that's what your tefillin has, three-headed, four-headed. I hope so. Good. If not, we've got big problems. So a three-headed, or lots of big problems, depending to others. So a three-headed shin and a four-headed shin. What's the basis for this? Where's it come from? What's the lumbus behind it? So everyone goes to town to try to explain what this is all about. But Lamaisa, that's what the halacha is. There is a major machlekes in the Rishonim about the formation, about the making of this shin, which is a very lumdish machlekes, which has some big nafkaminas in terms of dollars and cents. And that's as follows. When the halacha says that there has to be a shin on the tefillin shel rosh, so does that mean that it has to have the dinim of ksivas hashin? That means there are halachas when you write a sefer Torah, when you write tefillin, write mezuzos, so you have to be kosev. There are very unique halachas, very specific halachas, what's considered to be a ksiva in halacha, filchus stam, filchus gitin, filchus shabbos. There are different halachas as to what's called the ma'aseh ksiva. Is that what the halacha of Moshe Mesina was? That there has to be a ksivas os shin on the tefillin, that the dinim of kosev have to apply here? What do we say now? There's not a halacha of kosev. The halacha is that you have to have a shin. How it got there, what form you used in order to get it there. But it's there. My nafkamina, whether it was a ma'isik siva or not. So my nafkamina, is about a gemara that appears in Maseches Gittin. The gemara speaks about, primarily about Gittin. The gemara speaks about a sugi what's called chak tochos. We spoke about this in shul a couple of weeks ago. That there's a halacha, whenever the Torah requires ksiva, that the ksiva has to be done actively. It means you have to take the deal, take the ink, and put it onto the paper. And put it onto the parchment. That's considered to be a ma'aseh ksiva. You have to actively be forming the letters. Whether the letters are formed by themselves, so that's no good. So let's say, for example, if you have a blob of ink that fell onto the cloth, and it happens to be you're supposed to write a yud there. So instead of taking off all the ink and starting over again, you're a little low on ink in the bottle, so the ink's there anyway, so I'll just erase part of the ink, I'll erase around, and by removing some of the ink, so it'll turn out that a little yud is left. So that yud is posel min ha-Torah. The Gemara says in Uchaz Gittin, that's posel min ha-Torah. If you would write a get, quote-unquote, that way, through chak tochos, so that get would be posel min da'araisa, because that's not called the chosav, that's called the chokha. So even though the Gemara never says this explicitly by tefillin and sefer Torah mezuzahs, the Rishonim extrapolate. The Rishonim say, well, if it's not called ksiva for Gittin, so it's not called ksiva for chsafta mamazos pesecha bisharecha, it's not called ksiva for sefer Torah, kis for lechemes hashirazos. So whenever there's a loch of ksiva, it has to be an active ksiva. It cannot be done by somebody removing something from the cloth. So here the shaila becomes, this shin that has to be formed in the tefillin, must it be formed with hilchos ksiva as well? Must you actively form the shin, or can you do something to the background? Can you remove the background, and the shin comes into existence, in a sense, by itself? Is that also considered to be a valid shin? So this is a big nafkamina ladina. How exactly you have to go about practically forming the shin on tefillin? So there were some poskim who said that you can do it very, very easily. Just put a mold. So if you use a mold which has a shin on it, so basically you're pushing back the background, and then when you put pushing the background back, then lo and behold, the shin is there. Whatever's left, the shin is left, because everything else has been pushed away. So other poskim said that's a serious problem. That's not a kosher shin, because that wouldn't be a good way of writing a get. You couldn't write a sefer Torah like that. That's called chak tochos, to which the other Rishonim responded, who says that it didn't ksiva here? The halacha Moshe Mesina is there has to be a shin. It doesn't say there's a halacha Moshe Mesina, it has to be a ksiva sashin. So as long as there's a shin, my nafkamina. There are some who even go so far as to say, there was some Rishonim who say, that you can take a box of tefillin, a bias of tefillin, which has no shin on it, and take a magic marker and draw a picture of a shin on it. That's also good enough. That as long as there's a shin, my nafkamina, how it was made, what it was made, there's a shin. So this is a big question in the poskim. So this is going to be a nafkamina ladina in terms of making tefillin. How do you make the shin? So the mekilim held, you make it with a mold, and that's it, and finished. The machmirim held, no, you have to actually form the shin itself. How in the world are you going to form the shin? So when the mold is wet, when the bias is not ready yet, so you have to sit there with a pair of tweezers and pull out the shin. That would be the ma'aseh ksiva. You have to actually form the letter yourself with an act of ma'aseh ben adam. So you sit there and you pull and you pull and you pull and you pull, and then you make nice little crowns and you make tagin. It becomes quite a difficult job. Masha Enkin, if you use a mold, it takes you 10 seconds to do the whole thing. So as we all know in...
But there's only... Chaktokos is not the whole letter. Why can't I have the whole shin except for the top part of it, and then do the then have the tweezer just the top part?
No, any part of the letter that was formed through chakika is not called ksivas ha'os.
No, what I'm saying is
it's not that the completion of the letter.
You have the shin that's with a mold.
So that's no good.
It's not a shin.
No, but that, whatever part, in the Sefer Torah, if you would form, let's say you would form half the yud with chak tochos and the rest with writing, that would be no good.
If you had the thing, you started cutting away.
Yeah,
and
you would have to
build in the rest.
No, no, that would be potentially a problem. That would maybe a problem. So, as we all know, in terms of any product that you buy, so the longer it takes to, and the more skill it takes to make the final product, the more the price is going to be. So if you hold that you can make a shin just with a simple mold, so big deal, it'll cost you much less. But if you're going to pay, you have to pay the batamacher to sit there for an hour and pull out with a tweezer to make a shin, and then you want to be machmen that the shin should have tagin on it, because somebody, there's one day in Rishonim it says tagin ma'akev. So as we all know in life, every chumrah has its price to it. So that's why the higher quality of tefillin will the best quality tefillin will have the shin pulled out with the tweezer, and that should be good l'chol adeus. Me'ikra didn't we pass get the other shin is kosher. The Magen Avraham, the Taz paskin that lemais and me'ikra then the other shin is good. That the mold shin is also okay. No one should feel bad if the tefillin aren't made. I couldn't tell. Probably a sofa could tell just by looking at the shin which way it was made. I personally don't know how to tell, but. But again, Me'ikra did all the shins are kosher, but l'chatchila, one is already investing in a pair of tefillin, so the higher quality tefillin will have the shin which is formed through derech k'sivah.
Is there a name? Pulling it out?
Is there a halachic term for pulling it out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pulling it out.
Tweezers, I don't know. I'm not sure how they do it exactly. I don't know.
Another thing, the government mentioned that
right, there are different. There are a few different opinions about how what the shin is supposed to look like. And I mean, again, those are primarily different minhagim. Ikar adin, as long as it looks like a shin, so it's technically good, even in a sefer Torah. The standard Beis Yosef Ksav, the standard Ashkenazi practice that we follow is that it should come to a point on the bottom. The standard Svardi shin with called Ksav Velish comes more to a flat base on the bottom. So that whatever your shin inside your tefillin looks like. So, you know, whatever the parshas are, really, that's what the bayi should be on the outside. If you look at most Sfardim, we're wearing Sfardi tefillin, so you'll not nusach Sfardim, real Sfardim, so you'll notice that the shin looks a little bit different than our shin. The shin is a more flatter base. There are people who have stiras between what's on the outside and what's on the inside. You find this very often in terms of ksavari, because there's a, as we mentioned last week, there's a slight nuance of a difference between the ksavari shin and the beshezik shin. Again, it's not the most blatant difference. The difference is as follows on the, if you can visualize, on the, if you have a shin in front of you, so on the left side, the third, the most left of the heads of the shin, where the tagim are on, where the crowns are on, so there's a machlokes, the Beis Yosef and the Ari, whether that head of the shin should come out of the middle of the leg, or whether it should come out of the end of the leg. So according to standard Beis Yosef Ksav, it comes out of the middle of the leg, so it means the head is on both sides of the leg. So I don't know whether I'd be able to...
It looks like a Zion.
According to the Ari, it doesn't exactly look like a Vav, because it's not rounded on top, but it comes out on the side like a Vav. So right, it looks like a Vav with a square head, rather than a pure Zion. That's the Machlokes, the Ari, and the Beis Yosef. So again, Meikra, then we pass that both of them are kosher. So very often you see that a person, if you take a look at your own tefillin, you'll see that some of them are Beis Yosef, some of them are Ari, and lav dafka that the parshas inside necessarily are the same, depends where you got the tefillin from. So sometimes a person buys a batim and then later on, 20 years later, he switches his parshas, and lav dafka it was in sync with each other. Again, it's not the end of the world, mikra din they're all kosher, but it's a l'chora, would make more sense that a person should be consistent in terms of which ksav he's following. So until now we've been focusing primarily on the parashas and on the bat, and now we move on to the third part of the tefillin, that's the ritzuos. So the Gemara says here also there are a series of halacha l'moshe m'sinai that involve the ritzuos, and one of them the Gemara says is ritzuos shchoros halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that the tefillin, the ritzuos have to be black, and that is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So here it's already the Rishonim point out that it's strange, the Gemara never says the batim have to be black. The Gemara says explicitly ritzuos shchoros halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So Tosfos writes that if the Gemara doesn't say it, then it's not true. Then you don't need it. So the tefillin do not have to be black. There's no halacha that the batim have to be black. And Tosfos writes that was the minhag. He writes, not all people. He said there were many people in Europe and in the days of the Baalei Tosfos who had black ritzuos and white batim. As strange as that means, they had just plain batim. They were never bothered. They were a little low on paint, so they never bothered blackening the batim. That's what Tosfos writes, that there were people who had such tefillin, and Tosfos writes they're perfectly okay. So other Rishonim question whether that's really true. So other Rishonim say, wait a second, said if ritzuos have to be black, it's like kal v'chomer the batim. It's hard to give kavachoymes in these dinim halach. There's not dinim mamunas, so it's hard to say kavachoymes. But there are some who say that avada, that the levayis has to be black. And the Rosh has a pshara, the Rosh writes a compromise. The Rosh writes that the Balei Tais are really right, that the Iker Hadin, the batim do not have to be black. But the Rosh says we shouldn't follow that custom that existed in some communities, not to blacken the batim. We should blacken the batim. Why? Because it looks nicer. It's a hidah mitzvah. It looks ridiculous. You have to clash. One's white, one's black. Doesn't look nice. Some of it doesn't look nice because we're used to it, and it's hard to understand why does that look any better, look any worse. But Lamais, that's what the Rosh writes, that the Shemhidah Mitzvah, the proper thing to do is to blacken the bottom as well. So that's in Shulchan Aruch, how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. Shulchan Aruch writes that Ritzuah Shchorah says Allah Hashem Zinai, that's absolutely critical. Chayk v'lo yava, that's Mamish Ma'akim b'ti Eved, whereas bottom Shchorah should be done, but Lamais, it's not as important as the Ritzuah, which is Shchorah. That's how we paskin. And the Gros says he's not sure that we should paskin that way. He says he thinks maybe we should be machmer like those we've shown him, that it's but the bottom really, really have to be black. So again, there are different opinions in the later poskim how we should be knowing, but everybody agrees, the Maaseh B'Zmanos, everyone agrees that the bottom have to be black, either mikoach mitzvah, hit the mitzvah, or mikoach the halacha Moshe Messina. So the Maaseh, we're going to have our Ritzuos and our bottom both black. What exactly does that mean? How black is black? What if most of the Ritzu is black? Most of the bias is black? Well, it's got a little scratches up. You know, everything gets scratched in time. So how makbid do we have to be about blackening every single tiny drop of the Ritzuah? So the Mishnah Bura sounds very machmer in the Shaila. The Mishnah Bura has a couple of comments in Uchas Tefillin, but the Mishnah Bura gives you the impression that he's very, very machmer in the Shaila. The Mishnah Bura writes that if a person has to be especially careful when in the place of the Ritzuah on the Shalyad where he ties it, so we just keep on pressing against that part of the Ritzuah all the time, so it's going to start to to lose some of its blackness. So the Mishnah Berurah says you have to be very, very careful. You have to be careful if you know not careful that is constantly black as a shayla whether it's tefillin kosher or not. So the Mishnah Berurah really, really gets very, 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 very tzitzit about making sure that the ritzuos are absolutely 100% black. So you get the impression from the Mishnah Berurah that he holds its mamish, the whole ritzuah from top to bottom has to be mamish black. So others didn't accept that. Others said that it's hard to believe that the Torah gave us a halacha that every you have to sit with a microscope every morning and make sure your tefillin are black. He said it's understood. You look at the ritzuah, it's black. There's a little white, a little scratch, a little here and there. So some achrim said rov. Achiram hatas ruba kikulo. As long as rov of the ritzuah is black, which is hard to believe it. It will not be that way. Rov of the ritzuah is black, so then the whole ritzuah is out. Then the whole ritzuah is black. But that's the other achrim, right? But the Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't invoke that principle of rov. He gives you the impression that he's more machr about the shaila. So therefore, the chetchila person is trying to be careful about this. It doesn't mean every morning you have to go become neurotic and check your ritzuah from top to bottom to make sure that there's nothing scratched. But if everyone once in a while, you notice a little bit scratches here and there. So the good idea is you get that little pen, you know, the magic marker, and you just black it up. You do the touch up work as you go along the way. That's the Fenius Daiti, the Din L'Chatchila, and according to some, maybe even a Shalav B'Di'Evit. So one should try really to make sure that one's Ritzuos are in tip-top shape. It's Chaval to spend $1,000 on prayer tefillin, and then you lose it under $30 Ritzuos. So it should be the Ritzuos should try to be kept in the best possible shape. Mishnah Berurah has another Shaila in terms of blackening the Ritzuos. He says, what if part of the Ritzuah is not blackened appropriately if that's already past the shear of what's necessary for Ritzuah? It means we have Ritzuahs that are very, 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 very long. The Ritzuah doesn't have to be that long up Pidin. The shear of a Ritzuah is that it has to be enough to put the bias on, wrap around a little bit, go around one or two times, go down your finger and shine. Our Ritzuahs are 30 times as long. They go like the poor little bar mitzvah boys. So they have to wrap around at the end like 17 times because the Ritzuahs are so long, their arms are so small. So, or let's say on the Tefillin Shel Rosh. So there are different shirim that are given, how long the Ritzuahs have to hang down. So our Ritzuahs are way long. They're much longer. Also, the little bar mitzvah boy, the kid trips on the Ritzuahs, it's down on his floor. So those are way past what the actual shear is. So the Mishnah Berurah says, what would the halacha be if the ritzuahs aren't painted properly at the bottom part, which is dal yach? You don't even need that part of the ritzuah. So would that possible the ritzuah also, if that part is not painted appropriately? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, how could that possible? You don't even need it. So you could take a scissor and cut it off from the tool and it's still kosher. So how could the fact that it's white be worse than if it doesn't exist altogether? So the Mishnah Berurah says, no. He throws out a svar and says, no, it's worse. So Mizurif Matocha, it's worse. If it's white, that's a disaster. He says, if it's not painted properly, so that's a disaster. So If that's true, that chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah is true, and the other chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah is true, so that means the whole ritzuah from top to bottom has to be mamish black shibah black, and you have to be careful about this. So again, there are those who disagree with the first chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah, there are those who disagree with the second chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah, but it's a very easy thing to do. It's not such a big deal. So every once in a while, when you notice things that are off on the tefillin, why don't you try to be careful to blacken them. Another thing that can sometimes go wrong with the tefillin, with the ritzuos over time, is in terms of the shear, not in terms of the length, but in terms of the width. There is a minimum shear that the ritzuos have to be. Our ritzuos, in a high quality tefillin, usually have pretty thick, pretty wide ritzuos, so usually not a problem. But after time, especially in that part where you tie on, so it starts to wear away. So slowly but surely, after a little bit of time, you take a look on your own tefillin, you'll notice that area where you tie the kasher, so becomes a little bit smaller. So what's the shear? How wide does it have to be? So there are different opinions, whether it's some put it at 0.9 centimeters or 1.1 centimeters. That's different numbers to try to figure out the shirim. The Chazal gives certain shirim, and again, whenever you have shirim that Chazal gave, to try to figure out how that relates to modern day measurement always becomes problematic. So one should just be careful. One should, when you get your tefillin checked, maybe a couple of years, so the self will take a look and see that the ritzu is still good. If the ritzu starts to, after years, but starts to wear away, so then you invest another $50, you buy another pair of ritzuos.
Is there anything magic about the ink and use Sharpie, little magic marker?
Those magic markers, man.
What is special?
What's special about that? Is that it cost a few extra dollars? That's
what is there anything special about it?
It's kosher ingredients, you can tell me.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure if shoe polish has chazer in it either. So,
I think kiwi, one of them does. There was an article that kiwi is okay.
Kiwi, yeah, for years that was the old. They used to say kiwi shoe polish. That was the old. The surfer used to say kiwi shoe polish is good.
Right.
Okay, I'm not sure that the other ones are not good. I don't know. It's not so posh that it has to be kosher ingredients in the first place. And the dude has a long chew about that. About is there really such a deal? Chumras, we love chumras. A new chumra, you can only shine your shoes with ritzuos shoe polish. That's what we made lishma.
You don't get shined up anymore. It looks nice.
I remember somebody was screaming at me once in the dorm. We were doing B'dikas Chometz, and I wasn't doing B'dikas Chometz with the official wooden set that's sent by Sifta Beshraga for the last since the days of Tzitzis Mitzrayim. Sifta Beshraga has been sending those B'dikas Chometz sets. So I was using a plastic bag or something. I was using nothing. I probably didn't put in bread anyways. I was walking around Clinton, so the guy said to me, "No, you have to have a wooden spoon." So I said, "And actually, you're going to tell me the wooden spoon has to be made l'shma. A new chumra has to be made l'shma." So I took it, I looked at his wooden spoon, and I said, "Take a look at the back. There's a sticker that says Made in China." I said, "That's a real wooden spoon that was mamish kedas chadim l'shem b'dikas chametz." No, I don't mean to make fun of it. Anyway, I'd recommend, seriously, you just go to a Svarim store and you go buy one of those markers, and they'll last. I told you mine is still going 14 years later. It's still going strong, so they'll last for a long time.
And as you speak about it, how critical is it when the ritzu is turned around?
Yeah, that's pretty critical. Yeah, yeah. The halacha is that the part
that...
It is a very serious shaila. When the ritzua turns around and the black part of the ritzua is not facing outwards, that's a serious shaila. The Gemara talks about that. The Gemara says it's a problem. So that's not just a chumrah. So one has to be...
What is it? So if you
dive, no, I don't mean the thing in the front that turns, flips around like that. That's not as nishkefelach. But I'm saying if, let's say, the part that's around your head flips around, so then the black part is on the inside and the white part is on the outside, that's a serious shaila with the yotzei mitzvah. Or let's say on the tefillin shel yad, if it gets messed up by around the kesher or something, it's flipped around, that's a serious shaila. So one should be careful about that.
So for now, just made my son, he asked if I want to have it
black. Both sides, yeah, there's a chumrah, yeah. There are some who are mocked, but that both sides should be black. There's some, not because of that reason, there are some who that's the din, that you have to have both, but the minig Yisrael was never like that, so if you want to do it, you can do it, but then flipping would be less of a problem, yeah. Yeah. But that's not the reason why they do it. They do it because there's Chaim Volozhiner was machpir based on the Rambam. There was such a chumrah that exists to do it. But most people, I don't have two sided blocks. I have when my grandfather went to Vilna, one sided block was also good enough. There is one last halacha concerning the ritzuos, and that's in terms of the kesher, that one has to make a knot with the ritzuos. The Gemara also says, kesher al tefillin halacha moshe m'sinai. And here the Gemara doesn't spell out the details of what this kesher is all about. The Gemara just says, kesher al tefillin halacha moshe m'sinai. So first, primarily, we're talking about the kesher shel rosh. Next up, we'll talk a little bit about the kesher shel yad. But the kesher shel rosh is a big machlekes of Rishonim. So there are many Rishonim who say that not only is the kesher al tefillin halacha moshe m'sinai, but it has to look in a very specific way. It has to look like a dalet. And if it doesn't look like a dalet, that's not called the kesher al tefillin. tefillin, halacha mashma sinai. And other Rishonim say, where does it say dalad? The Gemara says, kesha shel tefillin, halacha mashma sinai. It's a knot. My nefkamina, what it looks like. So there's different opinions in the Rishonim. The Briska Rav is a whole fancy razzle, has a Briska Torah, that the dalad has a tzuras dalad without a ksav dalad, without an ice dalad, a lot of lumdas in the Ram, but lemais, we'll leave it out, the details for now. The bottom line is there are two different approaches. Some say it has to mamash look like a dalad, and others say that it doesn't necessarily have to look like a dalad. So there are different minhagim in Klal Yisrael as to exactly what the kesha is supposed to look like. So the Mishnah Berurah prefers what we call the single dalad, that he quotes both opinions, those who have the single dalad, those who have what we call the double dalad, which looks on the Rosh, on this Rosh Rosh. What we call the double dalad, which is the one that looks more like a box, like a member, so fit more than a dalad. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that, and the Mishnah Berurah prefers the other one. He says that he thinks that single dalad is the more correct of the two. Others disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. The people who put on the box say that they think that their dalad is the more, their whatever it is exactly, the double dalad, whatever that's called, is the more correct one. But the Mishnah Berurah preferred the single dalad. The Rav was very machped in this. The Rav was of the opinion that one really should change. If one has a box, then one should get it switched to a single dalad. Again, that was the Rav's. They say the Rav was, there were only three things that the Rav told people they should change their minigun. So this was one of them. The other one was sitting in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres. What was the third one?
I think it was
Tefillin HaChol HaMoed. Did he tell them they should or shouldn't?
No.
That you should? Yeah, those are the three things. I don't know, whatever they were. Okay. Some two out of three. Okay, so he said that...
you should.
I don't know. Oh, that you should. Yeah, that I can tell you for sure that you should sit in Sinner's Mitzvahs. Anyway, so again, there are different opinions about this. I don't have the guts to say people should change them. But again, there are different opinions about this. But the Mishnah Berurah did prefer the single dal. That is true. So for Mitzvah Shem next week, we'll talk a little bit more about the cash and then move on to other things. We have to stop a few minutes early, we have to run to a bristle.